Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Everyone, and welcome to Pixels. This is a show where we cover the news from the video games industry. We cover PC, consoles, mobile, industry, analysis, everything you would ever wish or hope to have in a gaming podcast, hopefully with a little bit of entertainment on the side. And today, it's the big Red Dead Redemption 2 episode. So much so that I wonder if we'll even have time for anything other than cowboys and ponies bumping into trees and shooting off their riders into the air. My name is Patrick Beja, and I'm very glad to be welcoming to the show once again possibly the biggest Red Dead Redemption fan, I'm not going to say in the world, but the biggest Red Dead Redemption fan I know, one Mr. Scott Johnson from Utah, United States of America.
From Utah. Yeah, no, I think I might be the number one fan that you know. I'm sure someone else out there is more obsessed than me, but I've gone on record multiple times saying that Red Dead Redemption 1 was the game of the entire generation during the sort of 360 PS3 era, if we wanted to define that as a generation. And I hold to that. I still say it's the best thing that ever happened during that time. And 8 years later, we now have a sequel and a prequel, really, but, you know, a follow-up. And I have all sorts of things to say about it today. So will Scott retain his level of excitement for the series? Will he still believe that Red Dead Redemption 1 or 2 are the greatest games ever made? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, so I was even wondering if we were going to talk about anything else, but I think we can run through the news very quickly and then discuss Red Dead Redemption 2 at length, because I was pretty certain that the discussion around this game was going to be, that's what I was saying on my friend show, was going to be, oh yeah, awesome, super cool, game of the year, perfect, let's move on. Basically, that was going to be the entirety of the discussion. And it turns out there is differing opinions about the game. So that's going to make for a very interesting discussion. I have a lot of things to say, and I'm sure you do too. But before we get to that, let's talk very quickly. Just going to run through a little bit of news and get them out of the way. First of all, financial results. Essentially, everyone's doing super well, and mostly Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo are all doing well. Microsoft, a couple of things that they have announced or, you know, talked about around the time of the financial results calls, which we're going to extract as interesting things as opposed to uninteresting things that are many, just numbers. Microsoft has announced they're going to be putting, the game division is growing and the revenue is growing, so they're doing well. But most importantly, the Xbox Game Pass is going to be coming somehow to the PC. And we don't know what form that's going to take, but that's intriguing because, of course, we already have the Microsoft first-party games that are there, available on PC as well as on Xbox One, and you get access to those games on both platforms when you have the Game Pass subscription. But, of course, on Xbox, you get a lot more games. So they're going to try to bring that over to the PC as well. That's exciting.
It is exciting. I actually have a theory about it. Since Game Pass sort of already exists in that way, like if somebody wanted to set up Game Pass and they don't even have an Xbox One, but still wanted to play Horizon Zero Dawn on PC and have it as a subscription model, they can.
You mean,
but
it's just Forza Horizon.
Forza Horizon, right? What did I say? Horizon 4?
Yeah, no, Horizon Zero Dawn, which you can play on PC, by the way. Or maybe not, because it's not yet. No, you can't because it's on the PlayStation Now. It's not yet on PlayStation Now, which you can play on PC, but you can play Bloodborne if that's your thing on PC.
Yeah, if you're into that, sure. Yeah, I got the wrong name, but the idea is already a good one, and I think has been successful for them, and I think it's a great step forward for everything Microsoft does. I think Game Pass is going to be huge for them. My current theory is they're going to at some point maybe slowly ramp up to it, or maybe all at once. I don't know, but I think they're going to make a play for the typically Steam dominated PC market. And I think they can do that with a subscription all you can eat Netflix model to gaming. Now, will that mean a similar library? Will it mean, it means a whole lot of questions, because licensing and who's going to be willing to do that, how those companies get paid versus when games are bought outright and they just do a percentage cut like on Steam or GOG. Like, there's a lot of questions about it, but I think that they have interest in that, and I really want to see what their play is.
Yeah, I think it's even more than that. Everyone else is going to be doing it. We have the announcement from EA. We have Ubisoft being interested in something like that as well. Streaming, and probably streaming and non-streaming. If you have the streaming capability, maybe you'll throw in the non-streaming as well. So they have to do it on PC too, or because they have to be competitive. I think there's a lot of that as well. And the interesting thing is that people or companies that might have included their games in Game Pass on Xbox in the past, because, you know, that's a funnel to access the consumers, might not do the same on PC, because they can access the consumers directly without having to go through Microsoft. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, very excited.
Sony is doing well as well. The PlayStation 4 is selling just as well as it did before. They have reached 86 million units sold, which likely puts them, we don't have exact numbers, but probably puts them above the numbers of the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 in much less time. So definitely a very, very, very successful console on Sony. Not directly related, but have you seen the restrictions and the warnings you have on the name change for PSN that they have disclosed?
Yeah, it's insane. We are clearly dealing with two things are happening here. We're dealing with a very old legacy system of name management that they've used since they've had a service, which would have been maybe even PS2 era. Some of that, I'm not sure if some of that carried forward, but anyway, certainly from PS3. So people are still using their same names, their same account info, all that other stuff. And so for them to change that was not only a pretty big technical feat for them to do, because they had to kind of retrofit everything. Of course, they'd do it different if they could start over, but they had to do that. And then they thought, hey, if we're going to do this, we could charge money for weird times people want to change their name multiple times. Like, it's just another revenue stream for them.
I don't think that's a big factor in the decision. I think they're going to charge, obviously, but if they could have gotten away without doing it, they would have. Because it seems that the restrictions we're hearing about are, or the warnings at least, you can lose access to old content that you've paid for. You can lose access to old games. Now, they're saying the vast majority of PS4 and Vita games are not going to be affected, but it might happen. So it might be that, the system was hard coding the ID as, elements of the network. And if you change your name, then it's not going to be able to find the old ID or something like that. Right. But yeah, anyway, it seems I'm guessing that it won't be as bad as this list of warning makes it seem. They just wanted to be on the safe side, but wow, it looks bad.
Yeah, it looks really bad. I mean, a lot of my programmer friends are the ones that are like, they're like, how in the world is this what they did? Like, I can't believe this is how.
Yeah, complete lack of foresight when they implemented it.
Oh, yeah, without question. People are always giving Nintendo so much heat for this side of their online business.
Yeah.
They normally are, and they deserve it. But it's funny to watch Sony get caught in that, and they're caught in it a little late. Because in many other ways, the console is ahead of the game. It's, got this cool remote play feature, and it's got all kinds of other connected cool technologies and, abilities to share your content and all this other stuff. Like, they're kind of fine in those other regards, or at least somewhat competent. But then you got this legacy thing just sort of niggling in the back of their heads going, that name thing's really going to bite us in the butt. It's game specific and all these problems.
It's a mess. You're saying they're late, and they definitely are. But I think it's better to do it now and feel the pain for a few months or a year. And then, you have a clean break and you can start over and you still have a good time left for the PS4, and then on PS5 it will be good. So, and the only thing I hope is that they can use the system that everyone uses now, which is you choose your name and then you have four or five digits afterwards, so that multiple people can have the same name. If they don't do that, my head's gonna explode.
Yeah, it's all very weird, and I know that all these console companies have had to deal with this. It's one of the disadvantages. There are many advantages to consoles.
I wouldn't say they've all had to deal with it. Microsoft did it right, I think, from the beginning, because they were more tech-savvy company, it seems. And Nintendo hasn't had to deal with it because they didn't do it until now.
That's a good point. That, like, in Microsoft's case, they have other issues. They have, like, the worst performing dashboard. It's sluggish and slow.
Right.
Even on an Xbox One X, it's confusing. Like, there's some UI issues. Like, they just all have this kind of stuff. And my point is that in the PC world, you're constantly updating. Like, Steam has a new update every other day, and there's always something new to download and patch and to fix and to do. And they don't have that kind of turnaround on consoles, and that kind of, it just needs to work. Okay, it's working. Okay, now we just do all the games. People are paying for a subscription. Okay, we're good. And then eventually, though, you have to face that demon and go, oh, crap, what are we going to do with these games? And now they're doing it. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, talking about Nintendo, they sold 3.2 million Switch consoles in Q2. They're still on track. They're hoping to sell 10 million. Wait, 10 or 20 million, I think, in the current calendar year. So that's until the end of March. I think it's 20 million. And they're halfway there, almost.
I think they can do it, too, because we're now entering holiday season. This is when you would see a huge uptick in sales for all these makers, but for them in particular. Yeah. So.
They sold 7.2 million in the holiday season last year, but they had Mario, they had, now there's going to be Smash, but I don't know that that's going to be enough to top last year's numbers, but you still have until March to do it. But I mean, they will at the very least get close to that number.
Yeah, they're going to have to count. They have to count on Smash to do it, because really
it. Yeah. I'm still not 100%. I mean, they have already sold more units than the GameCube, which was a failure. But so it's not like the console is successful now, even if it stops selling now. But I don't know how much it's going to keep growing, given the lack of titles for 2019 from what we've seen. But anyway, that's a discussion for another day. Sure. So that's an interesting one. Epic Games has raised $1.25 billion on the back of Fortnite, which is a lot of money. And I'm thinking they might be future-proofing their studio by doing what all big such developers do, which is doing multiple internal studios to get started on multiple additional games. I'm wondering if they're not going to use the incredible success of Fortnite to essentially become Blizzard and have a library of games, even as a single developer slash, they're not their own publisher. But
I mean, they were such an interesting company to begin with, because it was all about the original Unreal games and then about licensing the Unreal Engine. That was their business model. And
it was definitely their main revenue stream. Like, games were almost a side thing.
Yeah, for a while there, they weren't really making anything. It was just this engine. And that's still a thing, so it's still a point of revenue for them. Mm. But to see them, seeing Fortnite kind of single-handedly refocus them into being a games company again is really interesting. And with that kind of injection of money and the kind of cash they're piling up, they could do just that. They could be another Blizzard, another Bethesda, another, name a company, another Valve, a company who's taken their thing and gone to the next level as a result. They're poised to do it. I'd like them to finish and properly put out a real good Unreal game. And by that, I mean Unreal Tournament, the one they're working on that they've been quiet about for a bit. I think that was a thing they were really hanging their hat on before Fortnite exploded. And then everything kind of got eclipsed. So, if they want me interested in that, in their launcher, because Fortnite really doesn't do it for me at all. I'd go over there, though, for Unreal and arena shooters, stuff like that is some of my favorite stuff ever. So,
yeah, I mean, that
have me there.
That round of investment they're doing, or what do you call it when you receive the investment of money raising, capital raising that they're doing is the thing that makes me go, because they're making tons of money. They could use that money without raising any capital. But the fact that they are, and $1.25 billion, that is a lot of money. So the fact they're doing that means they're, I don't know, it feels like a shifting the company's strategy. Because they could have been happy with just Fortnite and the revenue from the Unreal Engine, as you mentioned, and, you know, raking it in and be happy. But they're doing something else, so.
And that's, I think, people should see that as a positive thing. I've seen their reaction to Fortnite's success as also a positive thing, because they haven't slowed down. They've just went hard. They went, okay, this has taken off. What are we doing? Okay, new events.
Have you seen their nightmare event?
Yeah, like they're all hands all deck on deck, and it has been since that thing with the Battle Royale mode launched, and it took some success. They've shown themselves to be serious about it, and I think that's good. They've got a pretty sizable ownership in China. Is it Tencent who owns some portion of them? I forget who it is.
Always Tencent. I think so, yeah. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yes, I think it is, because it's
always Tencent. For all we know, those Tencent people are always hovering around trying to make sure everything's going the way it's supposed to go. Whatever the motivations are, though, they seem to really be interested in not just resting on their laurels and kicking back. And that's, for me, as someone who values that in a game company, a games company, I like that a lot. So they could do some really cool stuff.
Yeah. And it is Tencent. They have a 40% stake in the company, but did they purchase them whole entirely? I don't think so.
No, I think they just still have it's not a controlling stake, but it's a pretty big share at the table. So I think they have a lot to do with probably saving Epic. I don't know the story around it, but I don't think Epic was doing all that great a few years ago. And I think that was a way for them to stay afloat. I'll bet they're now just like, gosh, dang it. If we just released Fortnite Battle Royale before that, we could have just done this ourselves.
Wow. Yeah. It was a while ago. All right. So moving on, Twitch is still dominating the live streaming market, which is unsurprising. YouTube has 25%. They increased by 10%, but that's not games live streaming. So Twitch is still the king there. They've announced a couple of interesting things. One is moderation tools, which are going to help, hopefully, for some of the chat issues we're seeing there. But another more interesting one is squad streaming. You can stream four people together. And I don't know exactly how you control what you see, if you know, viewers have agency over this, or if it's just the editor or the main user. But that's an interesting concept, and I think it's overdue to be able to stream multiple streams together. But I'm sure it can do some really cool things for not just for the viewing experience, but even more for getting people to discover other streamers they might like. So that's kind of
cool. Yeah, for sure. These the collaborations can be, you know, career starters for a lot of these guys and gals doing stuff on Twitch. But not only that, like, I just like generally the technology angle they're taking with new ideas on Twitch. Their integration of, for example, the way they do extensions is really cool. And the D&D Beyond extension that we're now using for our D&D show on Saturdays is so cool, because basically it puts our character sheets up on screen. Players can interact directly with the video and like click on my character and see what my hit points are, how many spell slots do I have left in this encounter, like all my stats, all my inventory, that sort of thing, and do it in real time. So something changes, they see the change, and it's all programmatically handled, and you're interacting directly with the video in this new way. I think that is so freaking cool that they're doing just this kind of stuff in general. And it makes sense that this is the next sort of direction they go, and that's just one aspect of it. What you described is another. Certainly they have, you know, probably other things in mind, but I'll tell you, the best thing that happened to Twitch was Amazon money. Just they've been able to invest and plan and make new ideas and push them out to market and try them out, and in a way and at a speed that they were never doing before.
There's Papa Jeff Bezos over there saying, innovate now.
Maybe. I mean, at the very least, it's even if they've just like given a hands-off approach, there's money to be approved.
They were doing things. They were doing things before, but it does seem like now they have. It's not just they're doing things and they have money. It's that they have all the money in the world, so they can.
And it was only. And at the time, it was only games. Now it's not. Now it's so much more than just games, and that changes the entire dynamic about what that place is and is, you know, how it gets used. And I mean, I feel like they were just kind of they were going along doing fine, but. You're right. All the money. When you have all the money, sometimes that helps. It's a big deal.
When you have all the money, sometimes that helps.
Yeah.
Someone else or another company that is doing pretty well is Discord. They've launched their store. That was almost 2 weeks ago. So it's a little bit of an old piece of news. But I did want to mention that it's a really interesting move for Discord because unlike the other stores, they're not developer exclusive, right? There's basically Steam, and then all of the other ones are stores by developers that are trying to make it so they don't have to pay the 30% to Valve when using Steam, which is an obvious advantage.
Well, not all of them, but yeah, a bunch of them. Like Good Old Games is, they're a lot like Valve actually, but, in that it's Project CD or behind it originally and all that. But there are, you know, there are a number of stores who are basically what Steam does, but you're right, they are very few in number. Steam is the clear gorilla in this market, and outside of those who are big enough like Blizzard, Bethesda, and others, you know, most people can't move to their own thing.
And I think the thing that makes this really interesting for Discord and for the ecosystem of stores on PC is that unlike Good Old Games, or even, you know, if you want to use the term store for a different type of thing, itch.io or things like that, Discord already has a user base that is gigantic. And people use Discord anyway for other things, right? So not only is it a store that is independent from developers, so it has an advantage there, but also it already has people using it. So I think Good Old Games is an excellent store, but people don't really have a reason to go there unless they really, really want to have something DRM-free, which clearly not everyone cares about. So
right.
I think it's really interesting what Discord is doing there, and they have an advantage over most of the others, except, of course, Steam. But we'll see.
And Steam is such a freaking juggernaut. Like, you know, how they even compete here is so tricky. And I'm always thinking about, well, who could be Steam? Who could do it? Could
Blizzard do it? That's my point.
Maybe. No, you're right. Discord's got such raw numbers, like ridiculous amounts of people use Discord across everything. So even if you're buying from Steam, you playing Blizzard games, spending time somewhere else in somebody else's store, the one common thing these days is you're all using Discord with your friends and with your multiplayer and with your whatnot.
Exactly.
So the fact that that's the case, you just have this built-in audience who's ready to look at a thing you're doing. At least that's the theory. And I don't know how they're doing so far out of the gate. I'd love to hear if they've had a spike in the subscriptions and all that, but
I think, you know, it comes down to what games are available. And obviously right now it's mostly indies. And they're saying, you know, Discord is saying, we choose the games we put on our store so that you have a curated experience, which, you know, given the number of games that come out on Steam is almost a blessing. I agree. But I think it's the reason is more that, you know, they can't really get all the games, because if they could, they would. You know, it's going to be a long road. They're going to start with just a few small games, and it's going to grow. And if it does make money for the people who put their games on there, then there will be more people who put their games on there. But down the line, over a few years, it might be a serious alternative to Steam. It's possible.
Yeah, I'm very curious to follow that. And I also like, I mean, so far it's mostly small games. But I think you may have mentioned it's small stuff. There's no big AAA titles. But that could change real quick if the uptake is fast.
Exactly. So hey, do you remember Intellivision?
I do remember Intellivision. My friend had one, and we went there all the time and played hockey and some weird god game I don't remember the name of.
So they decided to do something incredibly weird. they're releasing a new console called the Amico. So it's, you would think, you know, if Intellivision is going to do something, they're going to try to ride the wave of retro mini consoles nostalgia that is sweeping the country and countries over the past few years. And it kind of is, because they're going to be inspired by the original games, but at the same time, it's going to be a fully developed console that is going to have a number of different games. It's going to have controllers that are weird, and it's going to have original-only games, basically games you can only get on this console. The console is going to cost between $150 and $180. The games are going to be fixed priced, no free-to-play bullcrap, no microtransactions, between $3 and $8 a piece.
Yeah.
And it's going to have 20, several built-in games and 20 more in the online store. And it's coming out in 2020. In that description, I count, like, I don't know, I said 10 things, I count 15 wrong things with this picture.
Yeah, none of this excites me. I wish I could. I wish I, you know, I ended up with the Nintendo or the NES and SNES classics. I'm sort of kind of maybe interested in the PlayStation one, except, I don't know, those games don't hold up like Pixel stuff does. But despite all of that, you know, I like this resurgence. I think it's fun to do this. The prices are pretty good and all that. I wouldn't care if they said we're making a new Intellivision and we're bringing back that dumb card controller and the little wheel and everything. Like, that would be not exciting, because here's the truth. The Intellivision wasn't great. It was there and it existed at a time where I could suck up a little bit of the vacuum, but pretty quick, right around the corner, there was going to be way better stuff. And everyone quickly forgot about their Intellivisions and fired up their NESs, and we never looked back. So it's a hard bet to count on everybody going, oh, a new thing by the Intellivision people, sign me up. Like, it's not that exciting.
And even more importantly, they have exclusive games. So all of the games are going to be available only on that.
Yeah.
Meaning developers have to develop a game for this console that is going to be sold at the price of $3 or $8. That's it. They don't have an option to monetize further, and the game is not going to be available on any other store, any other console. What developer is going to be doing that? I think the thing they are counting on is maybe having that, you know, if Toys R Us comes back from the dead, or, you know, any other big brand store, they will sell this as a toy. And people can just buy it and be sure that their kids are not going to have any other access to other games, or, you know, I don't even know. Even the trailer is weird at the end, when they make it like this blockbuster movie ending where they see all of the faces of the actors, except here it's like, we have people from the gaming industry. And like, they announce it now and release it in 2020. Like, 2020, we're going to have probably... we're going to be going to the next generation of consoles. Like, anyway, it's a weird thing. It seems doomed beyond just a small number of we buy it because it's a toy and fine, whatever.
I feel similar about the way that Atari thing's been shown.
But even the Atari thing is a little bit more promising. And that's, you know, it isn't much. But
yeah, the bar is pretty low. I mean, even, you know, when the Ouya was a thing, it feels like all this stuff is just like bad Ouya.
Yeah.
Every time I hear about one. And the only time I trust him, it's like, oh, well, an NES. Yeah, that's like a cultural milestone. That's like, of course you want a classic version of that. Of course that's a thing they're going to try to do. And of course it needs to come from Nintendo, you know?
Right.
This stuff is just weird. Like, where's the ColecoVision one? When do we get the Magnavox, whatever it was called, that played Pong? Like, I don't care about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not the guy they're aiming for, but
I think no one's the guy or gal they're aiming for. That's the problem. I don't, to be honest, I don't even think they know who they're aiming for. They might have a vague idea of, oh yeah, people kind of like Intellivision. Like, even if it wasn't Intellivision, the brand, I don't think anyone would be talking about it. And that's not enough of a hook. So anyway, we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll all be proven wrong. All right. Let's just mention very quickly, Soul Calibur 6 has a, character creation tool that is crazy, and of course everyone's using it to make inappropriate content and also funny things. And 2B from Nier Automata is going to be coming to Soul Calibur 6, which, if people remember my feelings about Nier Automata, they will know that this is not necessarily a plus for me. Return to Obra Dinn. Return of the Obra Dinn is a weird game that I haven't tried, but I'm curious if you have at least seen the graphics.
I haven't, but I've heard stuff about it. It seems very cool.
It's the guy that did Papers, Please. So he has a very specific intent in his game design. And the graphics, just before... Sorry, Scott, I cut you off. But the graphics are essentially two colors, like literally bicolor. It's black and white, and the shades of gray are simulated by little dots of black in a white surface. And it's like 3D graphics passed through a filter of black and white like this, like Apple II graphics, but finer resolution. It's weird.
Yeah, it looks... I loved Papers, Please. I played the hell out of it. There was a time when I was playing Papers, Please where it became obvious to me that I was playing it was like I was an accountant trying to have fun. But because he had set it where he had set it, and because he was telling the story he was telling, it made it seem important to be processing people's passports all day.
Right.
It's a really magical thing to pull off, I think. So I have high expectations for this, and I've heard a lot of people talking about it, but I have not checked in yet.
Yeah, me neither. It's just, it's so original that I wanted to mention it. And it's got an interesting, like, not time travel, but exploring, I guess, time mechanic that... Anyway, it's keep an eye on it. And finally, Days Gone has been delayed by 2 months. It's going to be releasing in April, and get out of the Day of Doom of Anthem and other games in February. But it's going to be releasing, in April. And I want to keep out hope for Days Gone. But also, it's weird because I don't think we're going to have two zombie games from Sony as exclusive games for the PS4 in 2019, which might mean we don't get The Last of Us Part 2 in 2019, which makes me sad. But
I sometimes get the feeling we're never going to see Days Gone.
Oh.
I just get this feeling. It's just one of those things where it didn't even show at E3. Remember that? Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing it's gone through some reworks, but
I'm sure it has. And I'm sure that they don't want to just throw stuff away, but you know, games get canceled. I think that maybe that game missed its window for the best time to release a game with massive numbers of zombies in it. And I think maybe people aren't as interested. I don't know. It's hard for me to gauge because Sony themselves have just been so quiet. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I know. I can tell you that I have zero interest in it.
I have some interest in it, but maybe not a lot. But I don't know. We'll see.
Close to zero interest in it. I really don't. It's just not doing it for me. They showed other games this year that were like, whoa, okay, now I know what I'm looking forward to. And it wasn't
right. That. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Understandable. Ghost of Tsushima was one of those. Sure. All right. We have spent enough time not discussing Red Dead Redemption 2, so I think it's time we now correct that mistake and talk about Red Dead Redemption 2 for a long time. So as I mentioned earlier in the show, I thought this discussion was just going to be game of the year, thanks very much, goodbye. I don't think that's going to be that.
Yeah.
In very quickly, can you tell me and us what you think of the game in a few words, if you had to summarize it? And how long have you spent on it, just to give it context?
Probably 8, 9, maybe 10 hours in.
Oh, that's it? I've played more than you. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. No, I've had too much going on. And BlizzCon's going to make it even worse. But I did play about 10 hours of it, probably 10, 12. Maybe it's 12. I don't know. I have to look at it. But a lot of late nights, so it's probably more than I think it is. I'll say a couple of things. This will be short. I think a lot of people, myself included, had forgotten just how methodical this game is, or what the original Red Dead was. That game was very deliberate. It was get in, it was get on your horse, it was go do a thing by riding there and not cheating through some kind of quick travel. And when you get there, get off your horse, do the thing you got to do, skin that animal, put it on your horse, get back on your horse. Like, there's a lot of sort of deliberate, I wouldn't call it necessarily simulation, although some have said that, but it's very, very devoted to just the complete milieu of the Old West. That's what they're aiming for, and they always have aimed for it. And I think we've forgotten that. We played a lot of fast-paced Assassin's Creed games with lots of fast travel and quick horses that come up even if you whistle in the middle of the water, suddenly they're there. Like, we've really gotten, you know, a lot of quality of life things that have made us soft when it comes to what Red Dead was selling. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm going to say in my case, it took me the first probably hour to reacclimate and go, oh, right, this is, that's how these feel. That's what this is. This experience is this. And once I got there and started, you know, getting into story missions and getting where I wanted to go and seeing what that world had to offer, I am now ready to call it 12 hours in. I think it is game of the year. And I realize that's not going to be the weird thing in 2018 to say. It's got pretty much universal critical acclaim, with very few exceptions. There's more of a split among some fans, but again, I think we as gamers forget what things used to be like, and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. But all I know is once I embraced the pace, as I've been saying it, and remembering why I'm in that world and why I love it so much, it's completely changed my outlook on it. I think it's amazing. I think it's an incredible piece of work, and I expect to be playing it long after I finish the story and well into the online and whatever else they're going to offer that thing. I'm 100% in, and I will buy it again on PC when it happens, because playing that again. I think it would guarantee, well, I don't know if you saw it, but the companion app had something in it that kind of gave away a PC version.
Yeah, give away something on PC. It might be another companion app for you know, Windows. We don't know.
It could be, or something weird like that. It's hard to say at this point, but I think that they had way too much success with GTA 5 on PC. That really extended the life of that game in a way that made them billions of dollars. So I don't think they're going to ignore that this time. And they're talking about a unified platform of x86 architecture, and they don't have to worry about what they had to worry about with the last generation. But the point is, I love it, and I dream about it, and I want to be in it all the time. And it's exactly what I was wanting. It's exactly it.
And that's funny. And I
feel very strongly about it.
You've basically summarized, I think, the journey that a lot of people that love the game are going to be going through, and a lot of people who don't love the game are going to be disgusted by. I mean, it's already one of the top selling games in the history of the world. It's number two on that list, number one being GTA 5. It grossed $725 million in the first 3 days. GTA 5 did $1 billion in that same time, in the same period. Those are numbers from our good friend Daniel Ahmad on Twitter. But I mean, he collated them. For context, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, which is the biggest selling game in the Call of Duty history, grossed $500 million in 1 day and $1 billion in 15 days. So Red Dead Redemption 2 is already at $725 million in the first 3 days. So it's doing well.
It's incredibly successful in that regard.
Right.
I mean, there is one thing I would say to people who, like, if somebody came and said, Scott, you speak very highly of this, I don't really like Western, should I get this game? No, don't get this game. You're not going to like it. Like, the pace, the expression of that world, all of that stuff hinges a little bit on whether or not you're cool with that lore or not. If you're cool with the great mythology of the Old West or not. If you're not, I don't think I'd recommend it. I'd say, no, go play Spider-Man or something, because this is just going to make you feel like you're riding your horse all day or something. But
well, because you are. And I think that's important. You're kind of glossing over that aspect of the game, which I think is key to, because the thing. So, of course, a prequel to Red Dead Redemption 1, which came out in 2010. I don't know who would ignore that part of the story, but I'm going to go over it anyway for context. One of the most highly regarded games in history, Red Dead Redemption 1. I mean, it was a PS3, Xbox 360 era, game of the generation for many people. I would give it to The Last of Us, but that's just me. I loved it as well. It was one of the most fully realized open world games that had ever been made until it. We've had some interesting open world games that have expanded those concepts and sometimes been more or less successful in more or less ways. But I think one thing that stays with everyone who's played Red Dead Redemption 1 is this idea that you feel like you are in the Wild West. And that is something that is, you know, grander than just the mechanics of the game or the missions of the game, or it's almost intangible, the fact that they managed to make you feel like you're in that, not world, but in that time period, almost,
right, I want to say.
And the thing is, so the game came out and reviews came out on the day that they came out, or the day before, and it stands at like, what, 98-97% on Metacritic, one of the highest ranked games ever. The thing that I think is interesting is I think they chose Red Dead Redemption's, Rockstar, chose the publications that they knew had journalists that were already fans of their games and sent review code to them. And maybe not to people who didn't already love their games, you know, or at least had someone that they knew would love the previous games like Red Dead Redemption 1 and GTA 5. The reason I'm saying this...
Every single major outlet has them. Like, they all had reviews early. Nobody was saying they didn't get them, did they?
There are a couple in France, at least, that didn't get them. And I'm sure that in other... Maybe it's not. Maybe it's different. Maybe it's a French thing I'm relaying here. It's possible. But the reason I'm saying this is that Red Dead Redemption 2 has serious, serious issues in its game design. It is essentially all of the issues that you find in GTA 5 and Red Dead Redemption 1. The mechanics of the thing are a little bit weird. The physics of the world are sometimes cumbersome. The way the control scheme is weird. You have 15 different buttons to do one thing, or one button that does 15 different things. Like, my first couple of hours was a collection of me running into trees and running into people in a town, which would then make me wanted. And like, you bump into someone in a town and it's like, whoa, what are you doing? They put out their gun and shoot you, or, you know, call the police. And you're like, what the, I didn't, what?
And yeah, you just gotta highlight them and then hit square and try to defuse it.
Yes, exactly. That's what you need to try to do. But so I'll tell you a quick anecdote about my first trying to get a mission in a town. I get into that town, I'm riding a little bit too fast, and I bump into someone. They get angry, I get wanted, I get arrested or something, or I flee, come back, try to get the quest a second time, engage the cinematic mode, which gets you a third person camera and makes it very pretty to look at. In non-cinematic mode, you press R2 or L2, the left trigger, to interact with someone in speech. I don't know if I didn't do it correctly, but I press L2, it pulls out the gun and shoots the person. I'm like, holy, what? No! I stopped, like, arrested a second time. It happened a third time as well. I was riding through the countryside, and there was a hill. I was riding a little bit too fast, bumped into a guy on his horse. We both fly off our horses, get hurt. I get up and I'm like, oh, holy crap, are you, like, I start thinking, are you okay? Is it? And I try to go to him to help him, and he's like, oh, what did you do? Like, pulls out his gun and starts shooting me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I have to defend myself. I shoot him back, kill him, and then I turn around, there's a witness. The witness is like, oh, what did you do? I'm going to call the cops. So I start running after him, but I'm like, I'm not going to kill him. I didn't, like, he wasn't shooting at me. 20 seconds later, the cops are there trying to get me. Like, all of the systems contributed to show me everything wrong about the systems.
That's interesting, because I never had an experience like that. Where I got in that loop of trouble.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, that is a little bit, that's a little bit weird.
But I think I have an explanation. And before I get to that, the first 2 hours are essentially an introductory mission, a tutorial chapter. And they are, when you say methodical, that's an understatement. I don't think Red Dead Redemption 1 was this slow. They are excruciatingly slow.
I don't know. I think if you went back and played it, I remember the first 3 hours of Red Dead being very slow.
Maybe.
Like, very, but, like, okay. Talking to a lady, go out and lasso a horse that escaped, bring him back. Like, it's very
I think it wasn't as uninteresting. I think the problem with chapter one, which is the intro, I think it's very uninteresting because it's quite subtle. It is, and I'm going to get to the part where I'm actually agreeing with you. The first chapter, the first 2 hours are slow, subtle, and like essentially nothing happens or very little happens. You have a couple of action scenes, but mostly you're walking around very slowly and talking to people in a story that isn't compelling. Like, it's not super active and
stage. At that stage, it's not. That's, I can't disagree with that. That's true. It's very early on, you're just like, well, we're in this gang, we're trying to survive, let's get out of the snow, doing our stuff, whatever. And you're right. Like, but I felt that way about Marsden, and his first 2 hours in Red Dead 1 was the same. It's like, you're a guy, we don't know what's going on. He's talking to this lady, he's gonna help her get a horse back. Does he like her? I don't know, whatever.
Maybe. And I think it was a little bit more compelling in Red Dead Redemption 1. And also, this relates more to mechanics, which are, again, people might say, oh, you know, it was the same in Red Dead Redemption 1. Sure, that was 8 years ago. You would expect the control scheme to have evolved, to have been improved, especially in a game like this, which has, you know, crunch and issues, which we talked about last time. Oh, by the way, go read the report by Jason Trier for Kotaku. He spoke to like 90 current and former employees of Rockstar, and they tell him about the very, very difficult development process that they have at those multiple studios, especially the one in Lincoln in the UK that does QA. And Tom Phillips at Eurogamer also has a report that focuses more on that. It's important, I think, to read these stories to know how those games are made.
You can apply the template just about any AAA title that has
It seems worse for a Rockstar.
Honestly. Oh, I agree. I mean, who knows, because no one will say, but
They do say in those reports.
They do, but what I mean is, who knows, others, if come forward and say, hey, we're worse than them. I mean, we're probably not going to hear that, but it does give you this. I read the whole thing. It gives you this really crazy window into crunch, the crunch culture in the games business, and it's a problem.
Yeah,
they've got to work on that.
The interesting thing is that even the people who suffer the most from it are saying, we don't want people to boycott our game. We want them to buy it and understand what we put our blood, sweat, and tears into. So, you know, if you were conflicted about playing it, then don't be, because they want you to play it. So you're fine. But I think it's incumbent on people who even wonder just a little bit about it, to go and read the articles to at least be informed. Anyway,
also, if all you do is walk away from that with a little bit better understanding of how the sausage is made, then you'll appreciate what you're paying for more and why. And in a lot of cases, you'd be like, geez, $59 for that. Like, it doesn't seem so expensive then. Like, I'm not, you know, arguing that it's a good thing. I'm just saying perspective is always good. And I think it's better to know how your games are made instead of just wondering where why isn't my magic thing in my hands yet? Hurry up and make it.
Yeah.
I think having a broader perspective would help people with that a little bit.
Agreed. Yeah. All right. So I'm finally getting to what I was getting at after that very lengthy description of issues with the game that I've had. And for the first, I don't know, 3-4 hours, I was just quipping on Twitter saying, ah, ha, ha, see how this is bad and see how this is ridiculous. And just like many people are and have been. And I think, getting back to the review scores, I think if you already are used to these quirks of Rockstar games, you're not going to pay much attention to it or to those quirks. If you're not, they're going to be a real showstopper. And so that's why I think getting reviewers who already like Rockstar games might smooth this over a little bit to get to the good part, which for some people will never come. Some people will stop at this and think this is bullshit and bullcrap and not explore further. And that's a perfectly fine opinion. I think this game is not for everyone, which when you were saying it's not giving you the fun quickly like other games do, I completely agree and I will go further. I think this game does not care at all about current gaming conventions. It doesn't care that it's a AAA. I would say it's a quadruple A. It is incredibly detailed and realized as an open world, but it doesn't care about giving you the fun. Every step of that game, including the introduction, which is slow and methodical, tells you you have to play this game slowly. Like every action you do as Arthur Morgan, the main protagonist, is physically slow. Like when you want to open a drawer, you have to press a button that isn't a button press. It's a button, you know, with that little circle that fills up. So it fills up in 1 second, but it's still 1 second. It's not instant. And every action is that. Try to loot someone on the ground, you will turn them over, put your hand in their pocket, grab what's inside, and, you know, it's got to take 2.5 seconds, but if you have 10 people on the field, between this and that, there's going to be a couple of minutes. In a couple of minutes, in Spider-Man or God of War, I would have completed a mission, you know? It's
right. No, it's, what you're describing is absolutely the evolution in open world games. You absolutely are. I'm saying... I think there's something special, though, about not... I don't want to be punished, for sure. Like, I don't like the feeling of being punished by a video game, but I like those details. It's like...
But that's my point.
And dig in his pocket and get his thing. And there's something about it. It's just such a detailed world and a world full of actions that are just as detailed. Like fishing alone is one of the most detailed things I've ever done in a game in that game.
And that's, I think, what I'm getting at is if you have to adjust your expectations when you enter that game in order to get something out of it. Because if you're expecting a standard AAA game like all of them are, you know, Gears of War, Halo, Assassin's Creed, Horizon Zero Dawn, all of them are paced a certain way and they give you the fun. You know, they're very arcadey. You come to them and again, I love all of those games, but they make it easy. They're like a Marvel blockbuster. This is something that doesn't care about your feelings. It doesn't care that you want the fun. It will... You have to adapt to it. It doesn't adapt to you. It's like the thing that comes to mind is Interstellar or 2001 or, you know, whatever auteur movie you can think of that is a little bit cryptic and you're not sure, you know, you have to work to enjoy a little bit. And here the work involves, as you mentioned, slowing down. And yeah.
Embracing the pace is all I like to say.
Exactly. So when I embraced the pace, when I figured out, you know, maybe the reason I'm running into people in town is that I shouldn't arrive galloping, you know, in Spider-Man, you're swinging building to building, you know, land into the crowd. You're not going to land on someone and kill them. It doesn't matter. It's a game. In this one, when I get into town now, I slow down. And I do that as I would in an actual cowboy town on my horse. And when you slow down, you take time to appreciate all of those little things that make that world, I don't want to say real because it's a cliche, but that make it so well realized. And you take in the incredible, incredible amount of detail that makes you feel like you're not really quite playing a game. But so the way I describe it is I'm saying you play an Arthur Morgan simulator. That's what this game is.
Yeah, it is kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he quickly became, though I'll tell you the one worry I had very early is that I was not going to latch on to Arthur Morgan as much as I did with John Marston,
yeah,
and I ended up really latching.
Yeah.
I ended up really latching onto him. Like I end up, I am 100% Team Morgan right now, and I'm I like him even more than I thought I was going to. I thought I would just sort of say, well, he'll be equal protagonist in some way. I find him really interesting and fascinating. And his conflict of kind of do the right thing, but I'm in this gang doing bad things, I think is really well realized. I think just having John Marsden around for missions and things is fun, just not in a nostalgic way, but in also like you're finally filling in some of the holes that we didn't know about John Marsden and his story. And I think Arthur Morgan is incredibly well realized in his cutscenes alone. He's so emotive and so well rendered and so well represented that I could not be happier with the character that they chose. And I wasn't so sure in those 2 hours of learning everything and kind of getting my crap down, but I am all in on that guy now. I really like him.
Yeah, I agree. I thought he really lacked charisma from what we had seen before. And I think it's a few things, you know. It's the actor is great. The voice actor is amazing. Really very talented guy. Yeah. And it's very small things. Oh, this game's value is in the infinite amount of small things that it offers you. You're on your horse and you go through a little bit of foliage and Arthur bends his head a bit to avoid it. You know, you're riding slowly and he puts his hand down a little bit on the side and then gets it back to the, you know, to the horse or something. You feel like the character, actually I could stop there. You feel like the character, you inhabit him. And it's something that said like this, people would say, oh, you know, that game did this and that game did that. But it's not the same thing. It's like when you're in the camp, you can't run. You have a camp with your gang where everyone's hanging out. And some people have been saying, you know, oh, it's so real. And like you have real interactions with people. Sometimes it's janky. Sometimes it's weird. But you're walking around from place to place. You can't run inside that camp. That alone, like you can walk briskly if you want to. But that alone gives you a sense of presence. When you're mostly, there is some fast travel unlocked later at down the line. I'm not there yet, so obviously I didn't mention it, but this is just impressions. It's not really a review of the game, but the fact that you have to ride from one place to another, you have no fast travel, that was the case in Red Dead Redemption 1 as well, but the game is so pretty, you don't want to do anything else. You know, when you take the time to slow down, like I've been playing, like half of my game time is just trotting around in the fields and maybe taking out a bow to shoot a deer to get the pelt, which, by the way, skinning the deer is going to take, you know, 7 seconds of skinning. It's not like press the button, doop, 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 loot the thing, loot the thing. No,
it's intense. Right. It's like this intense, very realistic. Split the thing open. I don't know if you've skinned a rabbit yet, but because you skin these rabbits, you literally, and I found out this is how you do it if you're out in the wild. You grab it out of the butthole and you pull it off like a sock in one fell swoop. Like, it is really something to watch. But those things are like you make a decision. It's like, I need meat, so if I need meat, I'm gonna have to go hunt. I don't get to just run over some inventory and pick it up. You know, the one place they let you get away with that is ammunition when you're in fights and stuff. So that's good. But they really want you to go for it. And the fishing was the same way. And the poker is the same way. And by the way, I could sit and play that form of poker for hours.
Texas Hold'em is the best. Yeah.
It's so good. And it's so well represented here. And these grimy hands putting out cards. And just a perfect little representation of old West poker. And I don't think you're going to walk away with a ton of money because everyone's just doing 50 cents here at the max and that sort of stuff. But it's really funny to watch that. But yeah, what you're describing is, I mean, I had a moment. I'll just tell you about a moment I had that I had to stop for a minute and just sit there on the horse and watch it happen. But I'm making my way on a pretty big distance on my brand new horse I tamed in the wild. There's also another process, a pretty extensive one.
I didn't realize you could do that. I mean,
you can. And they're awesome. Once you get them, you can get some amazing horses. I've got this stallion that was just this big, beautiful black monstrosity beast. I named him Jack. But you have to tame him. you have to ride him and then kind of, you know, wear him out and then tame him a little more. And then once he's been with you long enough and you fed him a couple of times, he starts to trust you and he won't buck you off too soon. And then you get the benefits of better stamina, better health and all that. But anyway, it's a whole nother piece of the game that's like this big, complicated, separate thing that I appreciate. But I'm on him. I'm making a big, long ride across forever. And the weather changes in real time as I'm going. It's just starting to get a little overcast, nothing too crazy. And then I'm starting to see really dark clouds way off on the mountain horizon. And then these big lightning strikes.
Yeah.
Way out in the fields are just way off in the distance. As realistic as anything I've ever seen. And I had to just stop and look at it. And sure enough, when I got out that distance, it's just pouring rain. I'm in the mud. You know, I need a shower after this. I'm covered in mud. I mean, like all of those kinds of details are just me traveling, just me getting where I have to go. And it's in some ways, if you are looking for your next Fortnite fix, this will be exhaustive to you.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
If you're looking for something where you're just immersed, like true immersion, that's what I'm finding. That's what I'm getting.
In a way, I think that is impossible to do with a game that is faster paced than this. Mm-hmm. I think the pace has a real role in game design, because if you're, you know, again, taking examples of other games that I absolutely adore, like God of War or Spider-Man, you're rushing to your objective. The thunder is crackling in the distance. You don't care. You know, it's just, oh yeah, it's pretty, but whatever. I have to go to the X to do the thing. And sure enough, there are missions in Red Dead Redemption 2 as well. But the missions structure and the gunfight are kind of the most mundane part of that game. They're fun. Totally. They're well acted.
We didn't even talk about some of the amazing random events. And this is the other thing. I do every random event I see, and I haven't had one that's ever even remotely the same yet. They're all totally different with dialogue and weird behavior and, you know, like some strange thing about a guy who's trapped under his horse. And then there's a lady who's trapped under her horse, but the reasons for why they're there are totally different. And I can give her a ride back home or not. If I do take her home, I'm actually wanted in that town. So I have to lay low. Like there's so much of that going on. And I'm finding it so natural. Like I'm just bumping up against it and going, oh, well I could stop and save this guy. And, oh, I took out two O'Driscolls, which means those guys are really pissed at me now. And, you know, like there's all of these little layers to every move I make.
It's really a difficult game to explain the qualities of, because I think anything we describe, a gamer is going to recognize things that they have seen in other games. And they're going to think, oh, yeah, it's just like this or like that. And it kind of is, but really it isn't, because it's pushed to a level of detail, of uniqueness, of minutiae that takes it to a different category. You know, this game is a milestone. And for all of its very real shortcomings, which I think we've described in the controls, in the physics, in the goofiness that happens sometimes, there's a good amount of, I don't even know how to describe it. This world feels like the most real thing I have ever seen in a video game. I'm riding around in, parts of the county, and I'm going to be hearing a little bit of a stream. Like the sound design is insane in that game. I hear a stream, I turn around, I try to find it. Oh, I see there's a little, you know, it goes down here. The ground goes down in this direction. So I go there, I see a stream, and I pass through it. On the other side, there's animals, you know, you hear the brushes, the branches rustling when animals go through them. You hear flies flying around, and you turn around and you see that fly that you heard. Have you been to Saint Denis yet?
Bonkers. Oh yeah. Like when I'm okay, here's an example. I'm running around in that thing. I was heading toward town and it was a muddy one of those just after the rain, muds everywhere, a little bit of fog.
Oh, by the way, people make a big deal out of the snow deformation when you walk around in it and the mud. Yeah. there's a reason for that. Like, it's crazy. You have carriages rolling in the mud. They have the ridges formed, and your horse puts the detail on that is like just that. I know it's in the game now. I've seen it like 15 times. I still angle the camera so I can see and marvel at the fact that my horse leaves.
It's incredible. I don't even know how PlayStation's doing this. Like, that's the other thing. I'm playing on a regular PlayStation. Mm. I saw it running on a Pro. It looked comparable outside of 4K capability, I guess. But anyway, that kind of stuff is amazing. And I remember walking through, clomping through some stuff, just kind of at a trot, getting to a town. And I had to go through some dry dirt, and then it got a little muddy, and then it got real muddy and thick, and then it got dry again. And as I'm trotting through that, speaking of the sound design, every single step had different nuanced sounds to it. I could tell it wasn't just like on and off, like, oh, I'm on a hard, clumpy surface with the gallopy sound, and now suddenly I'm in a squishy one. It was more than that. It was a transitional sound between those two states of where my feet are, where my horse's feet are. You kill a deer and throw it over your shoulder to put it on your horse. But after you do, your shoulder, your jacket's just soaked in blood. And it is for the rest of the day. Like, unless you find yourself in the river or you get a change of clothes or something, you got dried, stained freaking deer blood on your shoulder. And that's just the way it is, because damn it, you killed a deer and you carried it on your shoulder. It's just, they really care about that stuff.
And you know, all of those systems seem like details, seem like gimmick. And I know that when I heard about the fact that your hair grows and your beard grows, and if you eat too much, then you're going to grow fat. And if you run enough, then you're going to increase your stamina and stuff like that. And all of these in any other game would feel like systems. In this, it feels organic. Like the beard growing is not something, or maybe the running is a better example. It's not something that you're going to, you know, okay, I'm just going to run for 3 hours of game time nonstop, so my stamina is going to be super high. It's not how you feel in the game. And maybe, you know, after, I don't know, 30 hours, that's how you're going to feel, but I don't think so. Your beard grows and your hair grows, and it's just part of being Arthur Morgan. You know, Arthur's hair would grow a little bit every day, and his beard would grow a little bit every day. And that's how I think it's received by the gamer. It's not that the system is there and you see through it. And maybe at some point we will start seeing through all of the systems, but all of these contribute to the feeling that this is a realized world. And they're all, as I was saying, an infinite number of small touches. There's nothing, except maybe the sceneries, which are breathtakingly beautiful. There's nothing spectacular about any of this. It's just taking the time to take in all of the details that make this game what it is. I don't know. It's difficult to.
So it's really hard to explain. Yeah, and you know, people say, "Well, 7 years and 8 studios and hundreds of people will do that for you." Yeah, I know. But you could say that about a lot of games. You know, I'm playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey as well, or I was before this came out, and I'm sure I'll circle back to it. I really enjoy it. I think it's an awesome AC game and a pretty good RPG on its own right, and it's great. But it is the kind of world I should feel this way in, because there's tons of detail there, you know? There's a lot there to be, but it's missing that stuff that you just described. Like that level of, we're going to take this to the next level. Oh, you think this is detailed? How about we go this much further with it? And as a result, it feels a little more like an arcade experience compared to this.
Yeah.
And I just want people to understand that going into it, that what you're getting into, I think, is very special, but it requires you and your willingness. And I don't mean that in a kind of a trite sort of like, well, the game just doesn't want to help you get good. I don't mean that. It's not the same as that. It's just that we've got 8 years behind us or more. You know, really, we have decades of video games as we get better and better at making them. There's more and more quality of life experience, and there's better and better reasons to save more often, or to quick travel, or to do all these things that used to be a bigger pain in the butt. This game's not really thinking about any of that. It's not really interested in any of that. They're interested in taking you into a world and letting you be a part of it. You just have to be willing. And if you're willing, it'll take you.
And, you know, I completely understand people who would think that, you know, who play through it and who think this is boring. Because honestly, I'm not sure it makes for a better game. What's a good game? I think we could argue about this forever, but this right. one has, you know, it really has indie qualities to it. In some respects, it's a triple or quadruple A, but it also is an indie game in some ways because you can feel that someone decided this is what we're going to, not just this is what we're going to do, this is what I want to do. And I don't care if it's good, if you like it, if you, whatever. I want to do this because this is my driving vision, you know? And this is how indie games are made. Of course, there's game design and all of this. And I absolutely agree with the people who say, yeah, but the crappy mechanics and looting and gunfight is not super engaging. I agree. I don't think it's the best. It's there. It's fun. It's okay. But it's not like the most fun you're ever going to get moving a stick and pressing a button, right? Like other games, like I keep coming back to Spider-Man and God of War because they're the biggest games that I've played this year, but they're not, it's not fun in that way.
Yeah. If you're coming, by the way, if you're coming in hot with Spider-Man being the last game you played and you're diving into this, just be ready for some, you know, there's some culture shock or not culture shock. There's just a very different world you're entering. That is a complete turnaround. It's nothing like Spider-Man. Yeah. And that doesn't make either wrong or right or whatever.
Oh, I love Spider-Man, but
yeah, Spider-Man's amazing. It's just not the same.
I was talking about this with a friend on the French show, and he asked me, "Oh, you know, this world is so incredible. I think if you were thinking about the perfect game as a kid, that's what you would have envisioned." And I disagree. I think the perfect game I was envisioning as a kid is Spider-Man. That's the kind of game I wanted when I was, you know, 12 years old. And I thought, one day we'll get that. Red Dead Redemption 2 is something that I didn't, that I didn't really think could exist. I didn't think that's where you needed to go to make a game. And I'm still not sure that's where you need to go to make a game. But it's just something completely different in the way that an indie/auteur film can open your mind to... Not open your mind, that's again the wrong word. I'm trying to find the right words to describe this. It's very difficult. But can show you something that you didn't necessarily think about it or you didn't think you might enjoy. And maybe you will enjoy it, maybe you won't. But... there's this deliberate intent that we keep coming back to, and we've said it, you know, 15 different ways already, when the pace is so slow that you start smelling the flowers, like almost literally. And there are tons of parts of the game we haven't talked about. Like there's the whole relationship dynamic with the people in your gang. There's the way you can interact with people in the, you know, in the entire world, which... I was a little bit disappointed to realize most of them are, "Hey, now, nice horse you got there, fella." And they say, "Stay away from me." And you say, all right, keep your hair or something.
Depends. Like if that guy's, if you, like the way the witnesses work, if somebody witnesses this murder.
No, but I'm not even talking about witnesses. I'm talking about interactions with people in the wild.
Yeah, just regular old people, sure. But one of the cool dynamic systems is if they get away, they may turn you in. If you interrogate them and scare them enough, they may not, but they may still. Like there's a lot of questions of whether they will, and they'll investigate these crimes whether you're there or not, and they'll do it in real time. You could hang around and wait for some lawmen to come and sniff around the crime scene and decide whether, you know, you're going to get put on a wanted poster or not. You can see all this stuff happening in real time, or if you're off doing something else, it's still happening. With or without you, it's happening. And that's interesting. If you sneak around and follow these people that got away, this is what you got to do, Patrick. The next guy who you pissed off, or even if it was just someone you walked by in town and had a little tiny argument with, turn around and follow that guy wherever he goes. He has a life. He goes to a place. Yeah. He walks into a house. He sits down with his family. He eats dinner. He has a bed. He gets up tomorrow. He gets on his horse. Like they don't disappear into video game land. They're in the world all the time. That alone, even though it's kind of esoteric and hard to track, is kind of mind-blowing.
I think the result of this is that you feel that the world exists and that you're just living in it. You're not the star of it. I had a moment where I the sun was setting in the camp, and Dutch, the leader, came to the cliff, and he sat down and he started reflecting on the nature of being an outlaw and the world changing and what people want out of it and what you expect out of it. And it's the writing, it's the acting, but it's more than that. It's the fact that this moment was going to happen whether or not I was going to be there. There's something, you know, many games have promised this, and while it's not perfect in this one, definitely isn't perfect, the fact that it achieves it more than any other game has before. And that gives each character in that gang, in that world, a quality of realness that is difficult to achieve. I think characters that achieve it are, it happens in very narrative games, like The Last of Us again comes to mind. You have a written, scripted relationship with every single character that you encounter. And obviously, after 10 hours, especially if the story is well written, you're going to feel very close to many of them. In this game, it feels like you develop the same kind of relationships, but without the ultra scripted nature. Of course, you have scripted moments, but it feels like the people become part of your surrounding organically again. We keep coming back to that idea, but I mean, we're not even talking, you know, the funny thing is, we're not talking about the core elements of the game, which are, you have a map, you get missions, you go to that mission marker, you start the mission, you do a mission that is going to take you 10, 15 minutes, and then you finish the mission, you can go back to the camp or not, if you want, which is very classic. You also have the camp mechanic where you can upgrade parts of the camp by donating, you know, skins or meat or money or whatever, and that is also another part of the mechanic. And there are all of those systems that make the, you know, skeleton of the game. But the meat is everything else, and I think the meat is what's important, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It's the story beats. I've been running with that Sean character, the Irish guy, who I don't want to spoil anything, but you basically, yeah, he's part of the gang, you get him loose, and then you're hanging with him. He's a bit of a hothead.
He's not Sean, yeah. He's Kieran.
No, Sean, isn't it Sean? It's Who's the Kieran. Irish guy?
Oh, wait, no, maybe I'm mistaken. You're not talking about the guy you capture.
No.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
The one that's part of your gang and is captured, and you go get him, you get him loose. And now he's just kind of, hey, you boys are so stupid. Why aren't we going? Like, just like one of those Irish guys, and he's so good. So I'm hitting that stage in the game where the characterizations are really coming out. You're starting to see everybody's true colors. There are characters I do not trust at all, and there are some that I do. I'm on pins and needles about John Marsden's ultimate fate with the group, because we kind of know a little of that from the first game, and some of that's going to come to fruition here. It's going to be heartbreaking. Like, there's a lot of just really cool stuff in that regard happening. But in between it all, I'm also, you know, I went and got a bunch of did a bunch of bounties just because I wanted to, and they were all unique and interesting and had kind of story of their own. And then I went fishing with a little kid and liked it so much I went fishing by myself later, and
then, you know,
just so I had bait. Like, those kinds of things are really, really getting me.
You're at the camp and you go out on a mission or bounty hunting or to town, and then you stop to hunt a little bit, and then it's getting late, so you make camp. And you wake up, you go to the town to get a bath, and you see something interesting on the side of the road. You get there, it gets you to another town. You've been away from camp for a couple of days, but then you come back to the camp and you give a little bit of money, you donate a little bit of money to the common pot, and the camp is still there. The camp is still there waiting for you, but it feels like, you know, you come back and they're like, who's there? Oh, Arthur. Hey. And yeah. they tell you, like, I've had a couple of events happen and the people in that town remembered that event, but it never felt like the script was telling them this event X happened, reference it in your wording when you address the character, right? It felt like the town remembered it. Like when I went to see people 2 hours after, they were like, oh, I saw the thing the other day, that, like earlier, that was crazy. And if I go 2 days later to another shopkeeper, they will say, oh, you know, people are still talking about that thing that happened. And, you know, I don't know if it was scripted like this or if they have like three different lines of dialogue, depending on which order you go to, like, but it doesn't matter. It felt like the town remembered, not that the script remember event X was engaged.
Yeah, there's a different level of that going on. It's not the same as just simple scripting. There's a moment where I came to town after that big bar fight I had there, and I came back into town, Valentine or whatever it is. And I pass some dude on a horse, and I make a point of like saying hi to people because
yeah, I say hi to everyone. I'm super honorable, like I'm playing me like too. A good guy.
Me too, because that's all I really can do. I can't be a jerk. But I'm riding through there, and I see this dude, and I lock on him. I hit X, and I go, "Hey, mister," and he goes, "How you doing, partner? Yeah, I saw what you did in the bar last week. I don't know if I'd come here this soon." Like it was the most organic reminder that I had caused some trouble, a ruckus there a week before that.
Was it the drunken scene or?
No, although that was, again, this elaborate experience to make you to see what it would be like to be a blind drunk cowboy in a casino or in a splatoon. Splatoon, what's wrong with me? what's it called?
Gang?
When you're in the place, the bar, it's called a platoon.
Saloon.
Gosh, dang it, dude. Where the hell was that coming from? Anyway,
I think it's the best. It's the best drunken scene ever.
Nothing comes even close. Like next time this happens in Warcraft, or I drink like an alcoholic beverage, I'm just gonna laugh because that's it's so good. And I know it's a different animal, but it's so well realized, and it's just long enough. Like when it finally ends, I'm like, oh, okay, that's just about the time that I would have been frustrated with this.
Exactly.
Running out of there all drunk and jacked up. Oh my gosh, it was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. We've been talking about this game for almost 50 minutes, and I think it feels like we've repeated the same 10 minutes of things five times because it's just so, we probably have said a little bit more, but I want to conclude our discussion about Red Dead Redemption 2 by reiterating the incredible beauty of that world. Like, just like it did for Red Dead Redemption 1, the one thing that comes to my mind, it's not, you know, the bombastic end scene or the story, although I remember that too, but the thing that I remember is, first of all, I think Mexico wasn't necessary. It was a little bit too much. But the real thing I remember is coming over that hill at sunset and just slowing my horse down just to look around. And it was, I felt like I was John Marston in that moment. In this game, every second is that. Whether it's beautiful, whether the sun is rising, whether the moon is up there, whether the sun is up high, whether it's raining, you know, if I'm near a stream of water, if I see a mountain in the distance, if I see a big, you know, rock formation, everything, like, and I think that does a lot for the quality of the game. You're never really bored because if you're just looking outside, it's like, you know, it's a little bit like this in Finland right now where I live. I just look outside and it's so beautiful, I'm never bored of it. It's kind of like that.
It's a lot like that. I agree. It's like a place it's a magical place and it always looks good and doesn't take you out of it. I never feel fourth wall about any of it. I mean, once in a while I'll slam into a wall and something weird will glitch, like open world glitch. It exists in this game. It happens. Yeah. But if you just look at the world you're inhabiting and realize that I could ride my horse to any one of those far off cliffs I can barely see and actually be there if I want to, or I can go find some hut in the middle of nowhere and get inside of it so close and so tight that I can look right up at the apple I'm about to eat in that building. Like, I think we as just players are because it's so well done, we don't think about what this actually is technically. It's super impressive. And there are plenty of open world games out there with impressive things that they do. But this thing goes from your finger to the size of the planet in a way that is boggling to me. And maybe not the planet, but the planet according to a cowboy, which is the entire open range of this part of the world you live in. And it feels endless. I'm sure there's a wall. I'm sure there's a part of some mountain where there's no pass. I'm sure there's an edge, but you never feel like you're going to see an edge ever.
And that's, you know, and again, saying all of this, praising all of it as much as I am, I'm still not sure it's a quote unquote good game, you know, because the gamey part of it is not that memorable. I mean, it's still technically it's a video game. It's on a screen and it's interactive, however little, but whatever, yeah, you know, Gone Home
it's a lot more control than something like Gone Home, which is just like a simulator, or something like, that's a better example would be like, I'll forget who makes those games, but like Detroit.
David Cage.
Heavy Rain, that stuff. Yeah. It's just a lot of, you know, it's like Telltale games. It's a lot of simple movement or whatever, and then you get story, and then you get simple movement or whatever. And this game, it's way more than that. Like, there's interacting happening.
And if those are, Quantic Dream, by the way, it's Quantic Dream.
Oh, that's who it is.
If those are games, then yes, this is definitely a game. But I do wonder sometimes, if the simulation, the way they're pushing the simulation, isn't a deterrent to the enjoyment of the game. I think ultimately, after, you know, 15, 20 hours, whatever it is, I've come down the side of, yes, it is fun and it does bring something. But the example that came to me was, the comparison that came to me was Shenmue. You know, Shenmue was trying to model a world, or at least a town, in a way that hadn't really been seen before. And what ended up happening was you would, you know, ride or drive a forklift all day because you had to work to make money to pay for stuff. And like, I don't really want to work in a game. And there is some of this in this game. You know, do I want to, if I have to go to a town that is, whatever, 50 miles away, and I only have a horse, do I want to spend the in-game time of 15 or 20 literal minutes riding? Well, maybe it's a little bit, I'm exaggerating, but it's a good 5-10 minutes minimum, to go to that place. Do I want to do that for the sake of making it a realistic simulation? Ultimately, I like it, as I was saying, because it's so beautiful, but I don't know that the answer is necessarily yes. I don't know.
Yeah, this is a hard question. I mean, all I know is I'm feeling now, in an even deeper way, that the same as I was feeling in 2010 when I was playing Red Dead 1.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm feeling that again. And it's
making you feel young again.
Oh, it's making me feel so many things. It's just, it's everything I want. It's everything I want. And yeah, could there be, you know, some control stuff tweaked, or, you know, better button mapping in terms of like what does what and when? Yeah, probably. But now I'm kind of used to it, so it's like not bothering me really anymore. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know what they could do to make this even more of what I want, because right now it's really what I want.
Yeah.
And I'm way in on it. Like, I'm going to see it to the finish. I'm going to go crazy when the online hits. I'm very interested to see what they do with that. I think it lives up to the expectation that I had, and I wasn't sure in the first couple of hours, like you can be with some games. Like, I feel like you can play Spider-Man and in the first 2 hours, you know, you're in, you're like, oh yeah, this is going to be fun all the way throughout. This one was a little bit like, oh, right. This is a slow move. We got to just kind of get ease in here, feller. You know, you can't just dive in and expect all the best sequences. And sure enough, that was the case. But I'll agree with you about the work thing. My least favorite mission in this thing is when I had to round up a bunch of sheep and get them to some guy's pen. I hated that. That sucked. That's work. I don't want to do that. So thankfully there's not too much of that. GTA had one where I had to move a bunch of containers around on a dock. I don't remember that, but that freaking sucked. So it's not like they're free of these things that are kind of lame, but the overall package has just been just minute to minute, one of my favorite things. I love it.
I think ultimately, if we can draw to a conclusion now with this, whether or not you like it, it's a game that is exceptional. What it does, no other game has done, and I think it's possible that no other game will ever do, because it costs so much money and time and effort and crunch and all of this. I don't know that anyone can do this or wants to do this. I mean, the $725 million in 3 days that they're getting might be some kind of incentive, but Sure. It's, I think there are possibly easier ways of making money. But it's an incredible game, and not everyone will like it. I think the people who won't like it and who will level criticism at it about its systems and physics and shortcomings are going to be very justified in those criticisms. But I also think that the people who will manage to look past those issues and take out of the game what it has to offer are going to live through something that they will never forget, possibly just as much as we all did with Red Dead Redemption 1, and possibly more. Because I've been playing it for 20 hours and I'm still marveling at parts of it in a way that I don't think, you know, I found the lighting effects pretty in Spider-Man. I have never felt that way. You know, Horizon Zero Dawn has really nice graphics. God of War has wonderful art direction. There are moments in Destiny when you are stricken by the design of that space world. I've never lived anything like this. This feels, I'm going to conclude as I kind of started during this discussion, this feels like I'm inhabiting the body of Arthur Morgan and looking through his eyes at a blindingly beautiful environment. Yeah. It almost doesn't feel like I'm playing a game because everything is so slow and deliberate and everything takes so freaking long that it almost doesn't feel like I'm playing a game. And I know we say this about different games at different times, but this, it's different. It's not the same.
No, and it's hard to describe.
Yeah.
Which you said earlier, and I agree. I don't know how to describe it very well. I do feel like it's safe to say, though, that if you are already a Rockstar fan, you've already bought the game, so we're not even talking to you.
Sure.
If you were somebody, because this is all in the line of what they do, but if you are somebody who's never played the first one or whatever, but you have a really strong interest in the milieu of the Old West and kind of the way we've mythologized it throughout the years as a country, it's really our mythology. It's all we have. As a very young nation, I think that you would really like this, and it would just take, you know, it's going to take a little bit of getting your hands around it. But once you do, I just feel second nature to me. I think about it all the time. I'm bummed I can't take it with me to BlizzCon, and even then I wouldn't have time, but I'm going to think about it while I'm thinking about Blizzard games, I guess.
You know, I think the biggest key indicator of what I think about it is going to be saying, even as I was making fun of the game's shortcomings on Twitter in my super quippy way, as everyone does on Twitter, about this game specifically, you can see those tweets running around and, you know, that it's being made fun of with reason for those aspects. As I was making fun of it, I was realizing that I was still thinking about the game and the world and wanted to get back into it. Something did grab me in it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're coming around.
Oh, I did come around. I'm now very, I'm thinking about it. I've had a busy week or beginning of the week and weekend, and I just want to play that game. I haven't had enough time to play it as much as I would want. And I'm thinking about wanting to play it, even as I'm not sure it's a great game. I just want to experience this more.
Yeah, so. I just want to be in there more. And the online is, I'm very, very cautiously optimistic about. They've learned a lot from GTA Online. That thing has been a cash cow for them, so they are motivated to keep it going. If they can do some really cool stuff here and keep it in the world, like make it, don't get too goofy with it, you know, go tropey with it, with the cowboy stuff, like we're taking over this ranch or whatever the things we're going to be doing. But keep it in that vein, and it could be this game I just play for years and years and years.
You know, I don't think I'm going to be playing the online too much. I don't know. We'll see. But
I played Red Dead 1's online like crazy, and it was super limited. There wasn't really,
You're like a cowboy. I don't know, furry. Like if there was
this stuff. I know, you're right. I'm a cowboy furry. I mean, I really do. I love it. It's one of the more unique and favorite genres I love. I just love it. And I love Westerns. I love the movies. I love TV stuff. I love it, all that.
And you know,
this is feeding that beast big time.
I don't think this game or this kind of game would be possible in another environment. I can't really think of any, like, it can't be in the modern world. It's too hectic for that. Maybe any kind of, and even European medieval settings wouldn't work for this. Asian medieval-ish, you know, that kind of time period wouldn't work either, I don't think, maybe. But the Wild West, or not so wild anymore West, is such a perfect setting for that kind of thing. Even the way they talk as a European, you know, it feels like something unique. So anyway, we've rambled enough. let's wrap it up. I don't think we can say a lot more about Red Dead Redemption 2. It's perfectly okay to not like this game. If you like it, it's going to be something really special, though.
Yeah, I think so, too. So let us know. Give us your feedback. I'd love to hear what some of your listeners come back
absolutely.
With. Yeah, how are you feeling about this game? Because, you know, I have stars in my eyes, but that's going to make me awful biased when it comes to any, you know, any hard... Anybody out there that says to me, I hate that game, I can't even talk to them. I can't have a conversation. I'll admit that. So less biased Patrick will look at your emails and parse it accordingly.
Exactly. Just, you know, come to frenchspin.com and leave us a comment on this show's page, and we will read them and respond. Or you can come to Twitter and let us know. Scott, where would people go to hear more of what you have to say, including Twitter?
Twitter, you can find me at Scott Johnson, and that's a fun place to be, especially this week. I'll be doing all kinds of stuff in BlizzCon, but if you want to follow all the other stuff I have, check out the shows I do, some even with Patrick, again, you can find over at frogpants.com.
Oh, that was it. I thought there was going to be something.
No one else. Okay. And I'm starting a Red Dead 2 pot. No, I'm not.
Okay. No you could do it on live on Twitch, play Red Dead with Scott. Or something like that while at BlizzCon. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter. Not Patrick. It's one word. Not Patrick. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. As I said, frenchspin.com is the place to go to listen and comment on this show. You'll find another couple of things there as well. And I think that's going to be it. You know, I think we're going to be talking about Red Dead Redemption 2 for a while, because we've only been playing it for a little bit. And there is a lot more to say, a lot more to experience, and a lot more to think about. These are, even for someone who has played, you know, 70, 80 hours, like the campaign is 60 or so hours, even for someone who has rushed through the game to play it, they can give you their review, which is going to be essentially raw impressions. Things can change over time. So I think we're going to be talking about this game and adjusting our opinions throughout the year and towards the end of the year. So we'll see how that turns out. And we will talk about it in the next episode, I'm sure. We might do a BlizzCon special for the next one, maybe towards the end of the week or beginning of next week. We'll see what happens. And we'll be back with a regular episode in a couple of weeks. So we will talk to you then. Have fun and let us know what you think about Red Dead Redemption 2. Bye.